It don't matter what I try, I just can't win and I don't know why. There's a fork in every road, I pick the wrong one and then I go. American loser, yes I am, disenfranchised from everything. Well, I fall up and I fall down, an American loser the day I was born.
It is this podcast that puts the spotlight firmly on second place. Welcome back to another episode of American Loser, guys. All right, if you're familiar with the show, what we'd like to do here is we take a weird topic in American history and kind of put a little bit of the spotlight, like we said, on the losers, the people that don't get as much coverage as they should. The line in your high school history book that doesn't get covered with any sort of a detail, and really it's an incredibly like complex story. Well, that's what we do here, all right? And if you listened to the show before, then you would already know that my name's KP Burke. I am your host. I'm a New Jersey-based comedian. We are here at a shared universe studio in Eatontown, New Jersey. Mike and Ming always taking great care of us, as always. Mike almost was our sound engineer tonight. He tried coming in on Big Kahuna's territory, and Kahuna, you had words for him, didn't you?
Yeah, I basically just threw him off the roof, kind of fucking just Conan style, and I was like, this is my land. You no touch American Loser podcast, that's mine.
I pictured him falling like Alan Rickman at the end of Die Hard.
Oh no, it was more RoboCop ending kind of deal. You're fired!
No, that's beautiful. So that's our sound engineer, the one and only Big Kahuna here. Of course, as always, my co-host for the show, the guy... We've done episodes without you before, sir. Right?
There you have.
They don't feel as good. They're still good, but they don't feel as good. My DILF of a dad, Larry Burke, is in the building. How are you, sir?
Hey, we're doing just wonderful, wonderful. What could be better than be driving through the teeming pouring rain to come record another episode of American Loser?
But we literally bridged the gap.
It was almost building arc time.
We bridged the gap between the two most recent what do you call them? Flash floods, right?
Mm-hmm.
The last two flash flood warnings we've had. We recorded the William Randolph Hearst episode, then sat in traffic for an hour watching stuff get pretty dicey.
Yeah.
And then we decided to come down and just relive that same memory, but going south instead of north this time. So
to the point where they're closing the Garden State Parkway due to flooding while you're on the Garden State Parkway. So
you
didn't have
too
many options. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what'll happen is we were seeing cars go down the south end of the parkway. And then they'd we'd be like, wow, they're brave. They're going through there. And then about 2 minutes later, you'd see them reversing the entire way back.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it got dicey for a minute there, man.
How long ago was that?
That was the William Randolph Hearst episode.
Damn.
So just this past Wednesday, I think it was, right? So now important here also, too, one of the regular guests we like to bring on the show is my sister, Carrie. And she's starting to get a little too comfortable, all right? She's like, she's bragging a little bit. She's a guest too often, all right? She starts saying, well, maybe I'll come in for that one. Oh, hey, I'm available that day if you... Listen, Carrie, all right, if you're listening to this episode, then I want you to confront me on this. But if you're not listening to this episode, it's because you only listen to the ones you're on. And that's called narcissism, Carrie. And that's why we're bringing in somebody to, you know, level the playing field here. Returning guest for his third episode. Formerly 171 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal.
Thank you, buddy,
from the Wayne Valley Wrestling team, Mr. Anthony Cianci. Thanks for coming back, buddy.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's good to be back. Three times. I'm pretty sure you get a jacket for that.
That's oh, yeah, you're right.
Oh, you get a jacket, a belt, some T-shirts.
With six, perfect. You get egg roll.
We're going to have to. did you bring your punch card, Ant? Because that's the only way we can keep
track. That's right, right.
Oh, yeah, I did, actually. I'll look for the punch.
Whose idea was merch?
I also want to tell your sister to confront you, not me. Just make sure that's clear.
Well, two former Wayne Valley wrestlers who both live in fear of Kerry Burke. We got a great loser today. We've been getting some really great comments. I mean, it feels good to be back. Brad Frizzell. Brad, if I'm fucking up the pronunciation of your last name, I'm sorry, bud, all right? Loyal listener to the show, a cool guy from out in like the Texas, Oklahoma area. He was messaging me because he was fishing, and I was like, you know, I was getting in from a gig at like 3 o'clock in the morning, but he loves the show. Of course, Stu Greenberg, you know, you can't ask, and Nick Franco, all these guys that just do so much for us here on the show, man. Some really great people, really great groups, too, on Facebook that help us. I just want to say thank you for all that. We are back, guys, all right? I'm going to try to have an episode out every week again. I had more fun when we were doing it that way. But before we get a little bit too started, I got to say one thing real quick. Kahuna, we got one of the nicest messages I've ever read in my life.
Yeah, really I saw it on the way here. I didn't get the notification for it. I was like, that is such a nice review.
So the guy's and now he sends me a friend request. I think it's going to be a bot. You know, I was like, oh, what account in Russia is this guy reaching out to me from?
Yeah, right.
What do you want to know? You know. But the guy's name is Carl. If I screw up the pronunciation here, I'm so sorry. I'm just a dumb kid from Jersey, man. All right, Carl Sundquist sends me a message. Seems like a cool guy. I was like, oh, we don't have no friends in common or anything, so maybe it's a spam account or maybe it's somebody who saw a YouTube video I did on something like the roast battles or whatever. But sends me this really nice message. So my family of five has been on a road trip from northern Minnesota to Yellowstone. We looked for a podcast on General Custer and came across American Loser. The kids got off their electronics and were truly listening and laughing. We have now listened to at least 6 episodes and are all fans. Yes, I understand. There are inappropriate moments for kids. But that's what made the giggles from the back seat so fun. What a great concept and brilliantly done. Thanks so much for being part of our awesome trip. The Sundquist family, sorry. And then finally at the bottom there, give a hug from the Sundquist family to LP. No one messes with LP. All right, so... I got to tell you that. I got choked up reading
that. Yeah, that was great.
Cool.
Great.
That's so, really cool.
Very cool.
Very happy, very honored. And if you guys like the show, do me a favor. If you haven't left us a review on iTunes already, that helps bolster us up in the rankings so more people like Carl and his family can find us when you search for cool shit. I love doing the show. We're not charging you guys anything for it. Come on, just like throw me a goddamn bone here, all right? You know? This is my soul, people. But that being said... if you're supporting the show, I love you for it. If you're a first-time listener, here's what we're going to get into. We're going to go right into the loser. We got a crazy loser this week. Everybody knows this guy's name. Nobody knows shit about him. That's a perfect category for a loser, right?
Ooh.
So, and like when I mentioned to you what the topic was, how much did you feel like you knew?
That's hilarious that you just asked me that because I already had something set up in my head to say it when you say his name.
There you go.
But I don't know if you want me to ruin it and say his name. Or you...
No, go out.
Okay. So Burke last minute asked me to be on the show. Right. So I said, oh, by the way, who are we doing today? Right. I'd like to read about it a little bit. And he just writes one word, Geronimo. And I thought you were implying like you're jumping in, buddy. That's it. You're just jumping right into it. And then I was like, wait, maybe it's somebody. So luckily I Googled it and I found out.
Yeah, that unfortunately.
Yeah, it's more than a catchphrase for balls to the wall. Here we go.
Well, I thought you were going to say that. Because you're a father of two lovely kids, all right? And I thought that, you know, when you were going to conceive them both times, you said to your wife right before, you said, no condoms tonight, Geronimo.
So, I got nothing.
And, and Mel, if you're out there listening, you are a lovely person, and thank you for letting me borrow your husband this evening. Kahuna, what do you know about Geronimo off the top of your head?
Nothing. I think... Well, not in this context. Wasn't he also the name of a famous keyboard player, if I'm not mistaken? Or
you esoteric son of a bitch.
That's only a fact you would know.
Oh, my God.
That's
did you know that the third puppeteer for...
Shut the fuck up. All right. Big Kahuna's out. So this is the episode where Big Kahuna's just like, fuck this. I'm out of here. Muting the mic. Goodbye.
Quit cursing, man. The Sundquist kids are
cursing. That's right. Hey, they got to learn French sometime.
All right, well, here's what we got, because there's names in our history in these moments that are pop culture references, but you have no idea why they're famous or iconic. Everybody knows who Babe Ruth is, but do you really know the story of Babe Ruth? You wonder. But as a kid growing up near a lake, we would often jump out of boats with my buddy Charlie Curcio and Chris Hollenbeck, both listeners. That's why they get the shout-out. You don't listen to the show, you don't get the shout-out. That's how it works.
That's it.
Now, if we were lucky enough, we'd find a rope swing. And there was a fun one up in New Hampshire at Uncle Bobby's house we used to go on.
Absolutely.
Which was great.
Yep.
And as a kid, when you would jump off a diving board, anything like that, one of the things you just knew instinctively to scream was Geronimo. Okay? No idea why. We didn't really figure it out. Today we're going to unpack that a little bit. So, and like we were always talking about, too, that's why we're going to get into it. This guy is just legitimately an Apache badass. Okay? Now, Geronimo was considered a member of the Apache tribe. And there's the, like, kind of break that down for us, LP. You're my go-to guy for Native American stuff.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've had a long fascination with Native America, but the Apaches were, you know, in any of the Westerns or the movies growing up as a kid, the Apaches were always the badass guys that we fought the Apaches to make this homestead or whatever the case might be. But actually, the Apaches is a grouping of... similar peoples. But, you know, I think the white man or the Westerners have a kind of a mixed idea as to what a Native American is. You know, is it the guy with the feathered war bonnet going, woo, you know, and running around like Uncle Tomahawk kind of a thing? That the Apaches were from the Southwest, and they're primarily from in the area of Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, southern end of Colorado, the southern plains. And actually the Apache as a nation was really made up of primarily seven subgroups. So
which, out of respect, out of respect for those tribes, we will not be attempting to pronounce the names.
Yeah. Some are easy, some are not so easy to pronounce, at least for this Anglo, that the names of the...
You mean some are not so easy, and then the rest are just, nah, that's not happening
yeah,
today.
Yeah, right. And a lot of them were originally named by... not themselves, but by the Spanish. I mean, the first contact that that Europe had with the Apaches was the Spanish conquistadors as they came in, which is also one of the reasons why they were such really great horse soldiers, if you will, the Apaches, because they were one of the first tribes to really take charge with the horses that were provided by the Spanish, because they North America really didn't have the horse until the Spanish came over with horses.
Now, there's a great story, too, about Hernan Cortez, who doesn't qualify as an American loser. But when Cortez comes over, he winds up being the guy who leads the expedition and takes out Montezuma and kind of the fall of the kingdom of the Mayans, if you will. But what I thought was interesting is that they say some of the first times that these guys appeared. Now, imagine that you're just a normal dude. You're hanging out. You're living in your ancient Mayan civilization. And then these guys show up that, you can't tell. When the Spanish rode up on horses, they didn't understand that they were two separate beings. They thought that the horses was part of them. So,
is that called a centaur?
Yeah, you're just fighting a centaur.
Right. Yeah, right.
That's fantastic.
So this centaur shows up and starts barking orders
That's
at you.
Crazy.
Plus, they're showing up with these great ships. I mean, things were enormous to them. If you're paddling around in a canoe or some kind of a little, two or three man boat, now all of a sudden these great sailing ships show up. I mean, they're great for the times, but big enough to hold a couple of hundred people plus horses and provisions
and
everything and centaurs. Yeah, and these guys are warriors. That's going to make an impression on you if you've never seen that before. I mean, thinking of the guy the first time somebody saw an elephant, like, holy crap, nothing like that in my neighborhood,
Yeah, that dude's ugly.
Yeah.
So, what I thought was interesting here is that Geronimo is he's a member of this Apache nation, if we will. All right. Now, the Apache kind of have this cool reputation. They're actually a peaceful people. All right, but their reputation, like you were saying, Dad, they picked up was they're essentially the Spartans. That if the Native American tribes are Greeks, then there's this Spartan thing where those are the guys you don't want to fuck with.
Well, they were definitely a warrior, but I was to say these seven subgroups, they didn't necessarily all get along with one another. There was kind of like the family feud within the family. And right from the get-go, if you have the Spanish coming in here and saying, hey, that's a pretty nice place that you got here. I think I want it. You're going away. You might have an objection to that if somebody, comes riding in or marching into your neighborhood and saying, I like your house. Get out. that's basically what it is that the Spanish or then later the Mexicans were always at odds with the Apaches because, they had some pretty nice places, and then when you start discovering gold and that kind of stuff in there, that's a game changer too to the neighborhood value.
So in the hour of content that I read, I was intrigued to find out that the Americans weren't the only enemies of the Apache, right? So obviously it was the Mexicans.
Found that fascinating, yeah.
Yeah, well, cowboys and Indians, that was my knowledge base, right?
Right.
And then you found out other tribes, too, were actually their enemies. So
right.
There, it was a pretty, long list of...
I also want to just quickly apologize to any of the audiophiles out there that are upset at the beeping sound and the... We tried putting a fan on here, but oh boy, that got bad.
I turned the fan off, and then Burke pointed it directly at me and hit the power button just now.
Yeah, it's not good. Old fat kid's going to start sweating. You know? So, no, we're going to go ahead. Well, I guarantee we'll be on time with this episode. I'll put it that way. So. But these Apache are fascinating people here. And like Ant was saying, too, is that they do have their beef with the Mexicans first, because the Apache land is considered Mexican territory at this time, which is funny because they just have their ancestral lands. They don't have, like, you know, they're not paying attention to the world politics of, you know, Mexico is being backed by Spain, but there's a French interest involved. And then the European settlers are coming in from America's westward expansion and shit.
Yeah, but I mean, the first foreign invaders, if you will, were the Spanish, and then the next was the Mexicans, and then we're ramping up through the pages of history here that they're always at odds with these foreign invaders. I mean, let's face it, that's exactly what they were. You know, this is my house, this is my home, this is my homelands, and now somebody else is coming in from the outside and saying that we're taking it away from you. Well, I'm going to have a little problem with that. And the Apaches were famous for resisting that invasion.
Well, they let us know they weren't quite happy about it. And we're going to cover that in detail here. Now, what I'm loving about this, though, is that in the American Westerns, like we talked about, like I grew up watching a lot of John Wayne movies, Clint Eastwood movies, stuff. And Eastwood was better in terms of how he dealt with it. And then John Wayne actually... against popular opinion, because everybody just wants to label him as a racist for the time, but that's when you look at him with the modern zeitgeist, you know, through those
revisionist history.
Yeah, revisionist prescription lenses. So, but anyway, he was actually really big on having authenticity, too, for a lot of the certain movies. Now, there's other movies where you can tell he had no control, right? There's some very uncomfortable ones. But that being said, anytime that the Apaches got mentioned, you knew you were in for a good fucking gunfight. All right, because these guys, you know, that was there's that great line in The Searchers when it was, it's Apache, they got you surrounded. Well, what are you figuring to do? I figure I'm getting myself unsurrounded. So Ward Bond in The Searchers,
yeah. Ward Bond.
But anyway, so we're going to get into these guys here. They're really interesting people. They had issues, like Ant was saying, with both the Americans for the westward expansion, but also the Mexicans for their encroachment on Apache customs. The Apache were skilled warriors who also led like this migratory life. They're kind of nomads.
Right.
There's almost like a badass biker culture to them.
The Apaches were not the Navajo farmers that, led a more stationary lifestyle.
Yes, this isn't the Algonquin that were entering into marriages with the British on the regular.
They were roaming around and dealing. That was their lifestyle, not to be static or in one place. They were the nomads following the herd or whatever the case might be.
And interesting looking stuff, too, because a lot of the, there's always this confusion, too, with all the other Native American chiefs and stuff like that. But what I thought was interesting is that, first of all, Geronimo, never a chief.
No, he wasn't a chief. He was more of a healer, a medicine man.
A shaman, one might say.
Right, a shaman.
He always the son or son-in-law of a chief?
His grandfather was a chief.
Okay.
And then he actually was like the right-hand man of the rightful chief of his tribe, if you will. But it's always interesting because people get that wrong. That's like one of the number one things they're wrong about, that, you know, Chief Geronimo. Nope. Just a medicine man, all right?
Right. Right. He was a leader, but not necessarily the chief. And again,
which can be misleading because people did follow him, and he was this, you know, fantastic warrior. It's almost like trying to say, like, well, there's this in Germany, there was this artist, you see, who also became Chancellor of Germany.
He was a paper hanger too. He was a wallpaper hanger for a while.
But what I thought was interesting here is that Geronimo was born June of 1829. And you want to guess what state, Kahuna? Modern day state, I should say.
I don't even want to guess it. I'm afraid of saying something real stupid.
No, you're good. as long as you don't say Rhode Island, you're off the hook.
That's right.
It was modern day New Mexico. And at the time of his birth, the land was considered part of Mexico, but the Apache were disputing that claim. Geronimo's grandfather was a chief, like we said. He had three brothers and four sisters. Geronimo's name at birth, all right? This is why I think Geronimo has a lot in common with you, Kahuna, because sometimes, when I get Kahuna interested in the show, I'm so happy, all right? Because that my favorite thing is when your jaw drops, buddy. That's when I know we got something good.
We hit something.
You're like, all right, we're reaching people. But sometimes, out of the corner of my eye, Kahuna, when I'm setting those moments up, I'll catch you laying in one of the yawning moments.
Dude, right? You always come in here late. My bad. It's past Kahuna's bedtime.
So guess what Geronimo's name at birth was? Goyacla, which means one who yawns. Now, if anyone can correct the pronunciation of that, and one of you motherfuckers is going to come after me.
Think of the families, KP. Yeah. Stop it.
It loosely means one who yawns. So now, after the death of his father, Geronimo and his family uproot themselves but stay within the Apache community. At 17, he marries a woman named Alope, or, Alope, maybe? I don't know how it would be pronounced. But they had three kids. Now, that first wife of his, and I put the emphasis on first, because in total there's going to be nine.
Nine wives?
Yes, yeah. Nine wives. So Geronimo and King Henry VIII have something in common. He winds up having – now, I can't tell if they were all I can't tell how many of them coexisted at the same time. And then also Native American culture is a little bit different in terms of how they look at marriage and stuff. But
are we skipping right to when he's 17? Because there's a really great fact about a young warrior in the Apaches that I read, which could be fake news, but I enjoyed it.
could be fake news. Talk to me. So, spirit of the G.I. Joe.
After they would make their first kill, it was custom that they would eat the heart of whatever they killed.
Oh, so then earlier I would have had to eat the heart of a Big Mac.
Chipmunk.
We have to kill it first, yeah. Awesome. Just run over a chipmunk in the street and go cut its little heart out.
You run over it, fuck. Go out to the street, just rip its heart out. Ah!
It only had to be your first kill.
Your new tribal name is he who eats roadkill.
If you're a vegan, you eat hearts of palm. So, no, that is interesting. Now, we are getting over to the part where you're 17, so I like that you're on track with this right now, Ant. So stop me if I miss anything else.
This was the most interesting that I've been – out of the three, way more interesting. His later years in life is, like, unbelievable.
He doesn't make sense. There's a reason we refer to him as a legend.
He doesn't make sense, and the U.S. government doesn't make any sense.
Well, there's that part, too. So, but anyway, as we're getting back into it, in March 5th, 1851. Okay. He goes out into town with a bunch of the other men from the tribe, and they're in town trading, right? With the Mexicans.
Peacefully trading. Under treaty with the Mexicans.
Mm-hmm. And a Mexican force of the regular army over there actually attacks the village that Geronimo's family is being they're staying in. And among the killed and the slain in this massacre at a place, I wrote down the name here earlier, but don't matter. Where they were living at the time, his mother, who was an elderly woman at the time, his wife, who was young, and his three young children, who were like pretty much infants, all get killed in this attack by the Mexican army. And Geronimo, almost like friggin' Wolverine, swears this never-ending revenge campaign. And from that day forward, I hate all Mexicans.
Mexicans, yeah. So, well, the Apache have a long history of not getting along with the Mexicans back and forth.
It's been going on for 30-something years at this point.
They would make treaty, if you will, with certain bands of the Apaches. But again, to say the Apache tribe, there was so many different bands within that cluster, within that umbrella of the Apache, that just because I made an agreement with the Kahuna, that doesn't mean that KP isn't going to come at, his band is going to come at me the day after tomorrow, that we didn't make an agreement with them. But the Mexican government, for years, was also offering bounties on Apache scalps. Now,
yes, sir.
That's another white man's misconception that, the savages, the Indians, they were scalping people. Well, where'd they learn that crap from? Well, they really learned that from the white man. I mean, not that there wasn't Indians taking other Indian scalps long before the white man showed up on these happy shores.
But they weren't the ones who started it initially. They kind of adopted it.
Yeah, though you're going to pay me a bounty for taking the top of somebody's head off. That's a whole lot easier to transport than just taking the entire head. I can just take the hair on the top of the head. That's easier to transport 20 scalps than it is 20 heads. Plus, it doesn't stink as bad. But the Mexican government would offer $100. And this is back then, $100 for the scalp of a warrior, a male, $50 for a female scalp, and $25 for a kid. I mean, men, women, and children, we're paying for that. We're paying good bounty for that.
Now, at the time, if you had two warrior scalps and a female Native American scalp, you could actually use that in order to go to a Washington Redskins game. And that's where they got the name from. I don't know if you knew that, Kahuna.
Damn. You learn something new every day.
Now, what if the Apache that was scalped didn't choose their gender yet?
Oof.
Oh, wow.
Oh, we're going there with this? Right. Oh, God.
They didn't understand
much
back
then.
There were signs, though. One of the Apache in Geronimo's tribe was known as he with a lower back tattoo. So.
Way to lighten it up, sorry.
So we're good to go on that one. Yeah, so you know what it was? It got heavy in here. We're talking about women and children being murdered, and we're just like, oh, jokes, please. But anyway, so Geronimo swears this revenge thing. And like you were saying, Dad, they already have this bounty on them because get this number, by the way, between 1820 and 1835, more than 5,000 Mexicans were killed by the Apaches. This is before Geronimo gets involved.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, so there's back and forth war with the Apaches, with the Mexicans and the Apaches, both sides are scalping people and taking names kind of a thing. So
and that was the other thing, too, is that
it's not a totally one-sided thing.
It's like you said, so this band of Mexicans is going to attack that settlement of the Apaches, so those group of the Apache are going to attack a Mexican settlement. You never get the people you're actually mad at, but you just kind of piss everybody off.
Well, they all look the same anyhow, so
it's hard. Racist. So now, this group winds up rendezvousing. They have to escape from the town, okay? Geronimo and the rest of the Apache, they have to escape from the town, and they all rendezvous together, and they decide they're going to reach
out.
While
they were trading, yeah?
Well, because once they find out the attack was going, they didn't know if they were safe in the town anymore.
Got it.
So they got to get the hell out of Dodge. They get back there. They confirm who's actually been slain in their camp, and they decide that they're going to take action here. And Geronimo's a little pissed off. So he's already talking about his never-ending vengeance and all that other stuff, and that he's never going to trust the Mexicans ever again. And he reaches out to they agree together as a group, I should say. They're going to reach out to another famed Native American chief by the name of Cochise.
Cochise.
What do you know about Cochise, LP?
Well, he's more the warrior chieftain. He's not the shaman or the medicine man. He's the badass. He's the military side of the Apache tribe. And I believe Geronimo's chief directs him to, why don't you go hang out with Cochise for a while, because if you're really looking to seek revenge, he's the guy you want to be palling around with.
Always reminds me of
One thing I would want to point out, too, to the listeners, that, and we say that they're at war with the Mexicans and the Mexicans are at war with the Apaches. Well, the Apache homeland is still now part of the Mexican territory, if you will. It's not the United States, although it's now modern day New Mexico and Arizona and everything else. At that time, when his mother, his wife, and his three small children were killed, that was Mexico. That was not the United States yet.
Correct. And that plays in a huge, huge factor. I think it's also, people have said that that's a reason we remember Geronimo more fondly, because he wasn't just the enemy of the United States. You know, he was...
Right.
You could admire from afar. It's like when the Eagles play the Cowboys, and you're like, I don't really like either team, but I hope they both rough each other up pretty good.
Right. So, hope somebody gets hurt.
Yeah. So now they wind up Cochise, you know, kind of.
All right, one more time. Is it Cochise?
Yeah, Cochise.
That's the easy way to say it. Co and then cheese.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cochise.
Got it.
So. Anyway, he winds up kind of stoking the fires of this this vengeance thing that they're going to go after here. And during one of the ensuing battles of the these raids, if you will, that are going on, the man who is literally known as the One Who Yawns, all right, because that was his name as a boy, if you will, he fights so viciously during this little battle, if you will, ignoring shots like kind of bouncing off his shoulders almost, right? People firing guns at him also, and he's getting in there nice and close with a knife, all right. Geronimo doesn't have a gun, all right? By the way, his name's not really Geronimo yet. That's how he gets the name Geronimo.
Right.
History is still disputed, but some say that they believe that it was the Mexican soldiers crying out to St. Jerome, praying that they would end the attack of the Native American wild man. So, St. Jerome, Geronimo!
Oh, wow!
Jerome, right.
Yeah, so by the end of the battle here, he who yawns is now known simply as Geronimo.
Right. Or John Wick. Take your pick.
There is some bad... Oh, dude, Toronto really is badass, though. It's crazy.
I read, too, that you were mentioned how he didn't... he avoided all those bullets.
Yes.
And I read before that battle, he went into the woods and, like, kind of meditated, and a voice... I don't know if this is... I didn't fact check.
No, there's a lot of supernatural stuff. Yeah, lot of supernatural stuff ties in with him. So
yeah, he said a voice came to him and said, you will not die by a bullet, by a white man's bullet or something like that.
So
he got confident and then... But I also read that he jumped and yelled his name Geronimo, and that's how he got known for it. But that doesn't make any sense if it wasn't his birth name.
Well, we find out, yeah, that'd be a weird one, too. But we find out where some of the Geronimo stuff comes in, which is pretty, because there's a reason we link it to jumping.
Okay.
That we'll explain at the very
got
end
it.
Here.
But, oh, so that gave him, got it.
That's the badass point in the trailer of this dude's movie. What is your name? And they don't even say it, they just cut to the title card. That's
right. This summer. So now, like we said, things are not going good over here, and the Mexicans are afraid of the Apache. To begin with, already they understand that they're a formidable opponent, right?
They're afraid of the Apache, or they're afraid of the wild man now.
Well, they've had issues with the Apache, right? That's the badass motors. That's Hell's Angels, right? Kind of hanging out in your neighborhood, and you're just like, oh, we'll try to stay away from them. But now there's a badass dude that's, you know. Now you're putting a name and a face to this kind of tribe of people here. So
right, the Apache in general are all feared and hated, and but at the same time, Cochise and Geronimo are now like two of the main guys to hate because
they're the face of the hatred now.
They're the ones doing the most damage.
Correct. Now, I always thought this was amusing too. We keep having to reiterate this, guys, because everybody gets it wrong. Geronimo was never a chief. People did follow him, though. He had people that were, because they saw what he was able to do in a battlefield. He was a very skilled tactician. A lot of cool stuff, like Ant was saying, too, with like some of the supernatural shit that goes on with him. But technically never a chief. So now one of the other things that made him interesting as a leader is that everybody respected this guy, but almost nobody liked him.
Yeah, he wasn't a well-liked guy, but he was certainly respected.
They didn't like the medicine man? Or, like, wait, what was it that they didn't like about it?
Well, here's my theory. A very great comedian named Patrice O'Neill used to say anytime he told somebody the truth about something, and he would get into it with women a lot, and he would tell, like, a woman a fact about herself or a fact about the relationship that she didn't want to hear. She would protest the information he was going to give. He goes, I'm giving you medicine. It don't taste good, but it's going to make you better. So it's interesting that Geronimo is the medicine man, if you will, because people don't really like him, but man, is he getting some shit done. So,
yeah.
I mean, maybe it had something to do with the other name he also might have had, the man who yawns.
One who yawns.
Maybe he just yawned at the wrong conversations.
Oh, yeah. People maybe just got mad at
him. Maybe he was just like maybe some other tribe member is trying to tell him some cool shit, and he's just like... Oh, you know, fucking Geronimo.
Why? So maybe he was just rude? Is that what you're saying?
Maybe he was just rude.
You never listen to me.
You always yawn.
Ah, sorry, what? But, no, so now Geronimo is, his name's already gaining almost instant fame here. The Mexicans are very aware of him. And like we said, highly skilled as a tactician, which led to the furthering of his legend, if you will. Now, there's also stories about his powers, like Ant was saying. He was rumored to be able to heal other Apaches and seemed to sense things before they happened and be aware of news before it reached him.
Right, premonitions and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and we also explore a little bit of the reason why he might have actually heard voices in his head, Anthony. You're familiar with Bonnaroo and Coachella, right? A lot of people on something, vision quests out there.
Something fuels those well, get-togethers.
There's some wild stories here about this stuff. But he's a very interesting guy, and his reputation is preceding him almost all over the place. Now, in 1873, Geronimo finds himself in the middle of a still-heated engagement with the Mexicans here. So that war is not really quieted down yet. He and his raiders would evade capture by hiding in the mountains. Because they knew the territory better than the Mexicans, so the natural advantage for
them. It's their homeland.
Exactly.
It's their home turf.
And there's still, you go out there today and there's people that said, you and I were watching that documentary the other night where they said, you go out there and you go hike these canyon trails, you'll hear drums that haven't played for right. many years. So That's their ancestral homeland, man.
You have no idea how much there is, like, a real, like, paranormal element to all this stuff. Like, even though, like, we joke about it. There's a lot of that lore associated with, like, just the Apaches and that whole side of the culture. If that's a whole other deep dive, if you ever want to get into that.
No, they're fast. That's why this one... I try to keep the topic to a person or just a topic that's so.
But this allows you to jump into that a little bit.
Yeah, it's so we're going to get our feet wet a little bit, but you're absolutely right, dude.
That's another whole.
It's a whole
study.
So now they're up in these mountains here, and what they finally realized the Sierra Madre Mountains, correct? And after months of brutal fighting, they go ahead and they decide that the Apache and the Mexicans are going to attempt to reach a peace arrangement. The Apache arrive in the Chihuahua province, all right, which is just very fun to say.
Right.
By the way, the Chihuahua province, several of the major battles for our boy Pancho Villa took place over there.
And so Chihuahua is just south of the Rio Grande mm-hmm. River, which is going to also play a part in the Apache history.
Also correct. What are you going to say?
I just imagine a bunch of Chihuahuas fighting in the desert with the Taco Bell one.
As the leader?
Sorry, I could not picture that.
Well, it's funny because we as Americans, as English-speaking Americans, we tend to put this beauty on a foreign language because it sounds so foreign to us. So I remember, and we will talk about this a little bit later, when I would go down to St. Augustine, Florida, when I was stationed in the Navy in Jacksonville, you'd go down there and there would be the beautiful, there's just this gorgeous bay known as Matanzas Bay, which means Massacre Bay.
Right.
And you're like, man, I don't think they'd sell postcards right. if this was in English named Massacre Bay. Greetings from Massacre Bay. I proposed to my fiance at Massacre Bay.
As a
Someone in Massacre
there.
Bay loves me.
I hope one of my friends goes there and gets a proposal so I could just comment, that's not what that means. man.
So they agree to this meeting, if you will, where they're going to attempt to bury the hatchet, and they meet at a place called Casas Grande. All right. Now, during the celebration, after the peace treaty, the Mexicans give their Apache counterparts, who they'd been warring with and are now celebrating with at the end of the hostilities here, something known as mezcal, which is a alcoholic drink that can also lead to some intoxication and potentially some supernatural abilities, if you will.
Imagine that party. So you're telling me is the Apache tribes bring all their...
Yeah, Hell's Angels came by to hang out with MS-13. What kind of drugs are they bringing to that party? So if you smoke the meth while you snort the coke, that's how you see the music. You understand? So they bring in this mezcal, and they get all of the Apache very, very intoxicated. And while they're intoxicated, in almost a Game of Thrones Red Wedding type moment, the Mexicans then launch their attack and instantly kill 20 of Geronimo's men. They capture many more. Geronimo and others able to escape what became known as the massacre at Casas Grande. You killed his wife.
Killed his mother.
You killed his mother. You killed his children. All right.
He goes to war with
you. Three kids, right?
Yep. He goes to war with you. He's formidable. Out in the hills there. So now you lure him back in. You're like, finally, a chance to end this. You know, okay, well, I'm going to go back to my life here. And they pull that shit. He already swore undying vengeance to us. Now he's going to call us treacherous, all the other nasty things he could possibly. He hated the Mexicans. Until his dying breath, he hated the Mexicans.
Right.
So now I thought this was interesting, too. As the U.S. is expanding westward now, Geronimo increasingly becomes more and more of their problem. Mexico is almost too happy to hand over to the United States. Oh, I understand we lost a war, but hey, the territory we're going to give you. By the way, there's a there's an element in town.
Right.
Yeah, congratulations.
There's already some locals.
Right. Yeah,
it's almost like a just moving in. Like there goes the neighborhood.
Good luck with that. We've been dealing it
trying
for a
to bring in some
years.
Gentrification. Shit already.
Yeah, it's like when the U.S. showed up in Vietnam and they're like, the French said we could have this. But now they get out there. They're almost too happy to hand this land over and the problem of Geronimo over to the Americans. Geronimo was able to escape pursuit by the American forces, often due to his deep knowledge of the lands. Again, it's his backyard, all right? It's his backyard, man. The people living in the house are changing, but it's still his backyard.
Right. So the landlord is, well... The landlord might be different, but it's his house, it's his property, it's his homeland,
which works out perfectly. Now he's able to continue to escape all the time. One story includes Geronimo being chased into a cave, where the American forces, they finally surround him. They got him dead to rights. All right, he goes into the cave. They're like, "We're gonna starve this bastard out. We got him. No way he's getting out." And then like one of the other scouts comes and goes, "Hey, did you guys see Geronimo running about like 3 miles away over there?" And they're like, "No way, man." So then they send guys into like there has to be a back exit. So there has to be like another – it's not truly a cave. It's a tunnel.
Right.
So they walk in and to this day they never found the second exit that he came out of. So Geronimo had this mystical quality again. He's able to evade capture. So
he's in the tomb, but he has risen again.
He's one with the moon.
That was deep.
Ooh, New Testament letter, huh?
He's one with the Matrix.
There you go.
So now his reputation as mystical continues to grow here too. And that cave still exists and is known as Geronimo's Cave. It's actually a hiking trail you can go on. So
hell no.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. Hell no.
You go there right after Massacre Bay.
It's
right.
Sure.
So Geronimo's Cave is I thought that was a great story. I wanted to tell that one. He also invades capture from literally thousands of both Mexican and U.S. forces, often playing them against one. So now the Apache, there's this idea – you hear the term Indian giver, and it's always done as an insult.
Or a negative connotation to Indian giver.
Yes. Right? Someone will hand – they'll give you something and they'll ask for it back. I'm like, oh, you're being an Indian giver. You know, I got you this nice present, but I want to play with it too, kind of a thing. So anyway, the reason why they say that was – We didn't understand that. They just didn't understand property the way we did. We're sitting there where we had to have Calvin and Locke and all the other people had to sit there and explain what property was and individual liberty and personal freedom and shit in order to establish what was becoming the United States. So we get over and these guys are like, oh yeah, well that rock there it belongs to everybody. So I mean, I'm gonna give it to you right now, but in about 30 minutes I'm gonna need it back because I got to give it to this guy because it's his too. So they didn't really understand that. So now what always made me laugh here is that the Apache also clearly did not understand how the maps were being drawn up for territories, okay? There's no line in the sand that says like, oh, over here is New Mexico and here's Arizona.
Right. The four corners were a little beyond him.
We invented that shit.
That's right.
People forget that all the time. There's a hilarious line in an awful movie that's very fun to laugh at. It was Battlefield Earth, the one with John Travolta, right, Kahuna? So there's a hilarious one where, it's these, humans in like a post-apocalyptic world, and the humans are up in the a spacecraft for the first time. They're flying over the United States, and they're showing the map. He goes, "This used to be the United States right here." He goes, "What happened to the letters over?" He goes, "They probably faded away with time."
can't see them anymore.
Always made me laugh.
Well, just that whole border thing, too. I mean, the United States and Mexico, the Mexican government, actually went to war after the war in Texas, right? Where is the exact boundary for Texas? Is it the Rio Grande River, or is it a bunch of miles north of the Rio Grande? And General Polk, President Polk, they nicknamed the war with Mexico.
There's
Polk's
a Facebook
war.
Feature named after him.
Yeah. That where is the U.S. border? Well, turns out, once we went to war with Mexico, we picked the fight with Mexico, invaded their country, and captured their city. Then they relinquished the southern half of the United States, the southwestern end of the United States, at the conclusion with the war with Mexico. But, that was so completely foreign to the Native American point of view. How can you possibly have a border? I mean, our homeland is both north of the Rio Grande and south of the Rio Grande. Are you talking about going into Chihuahua? Well, that was all part of their homelands.
Which makes me laugh here now, because one of the things that Geronimo was so successful at was you grew up with sisters, all right? Did you have if you got like in trouble, you'd run into one sister's room because the other sister couldn't chase you in there?
No, I'd run into my own room because he used to gang up and beat the shit out of me.
I forgot you had two very lovely now, but at one time, hyper-violent young ladies.
So, that was pre-Wayne, yeah.
Well, no, my day, like the move we used to have was if you could run, my sister would do this all the time. She would do something to piss me off, then I'd go to do something about it, and then she would run and make sure she found a parent real quick to stand next to, because, well, you won't hit me in front of the parents. That was
yes,
the move.
Yes, yes.
So that's almost what Geronimo's doing here, where it's like, oh, the Mexicans are after us. We better go hide in the United States side of town, all right? And then when the American forces are closing on him, he goes and hides back over into Mexico because he knows the two of them aren't going to go into each other's territory because the tensions are still it's – let's put it this way. The war's
well
over, but they're not –
yeah, they don't play well.
Yeah, shit still ain't really good down there if you think about it. So, but that always made me laugh that he was able to do that. It should be noted here, like we were saying, though, that again, this is Geronimo with his band of people. The band could go up to somewhere in the hundreds. At one time, there was about almost 1,000 women, men and women that were following him. And then at the lowest times, it was about like maybe 38 people, I think. But he always had a crowd with him. So now, because he's able to get back and forth into Mexico and the United States, and there's more and more settlers looking to move west, and the United States needs the settlers to go in there because in order to get out of debt, the original move of the United States was we could always sell land. So the deficit's it's going through. Well, let's just sell some of the land to the people and then make money off that. And then the problem is we eventually ran out of land to sell. But that's why we're inventing Space Force now. We're going to sell the moon. So, but
wasn't gold a big factor?
Yes.
Gold was becoming a huge factor too now. Now, the people that want to settle out here, the issue they're having is that that they're terrified of the guy who's become known as the deadliest Indian of all. The U.S. is now forced to launch what becomes known as the Geronimo Campaign, which at its height – if tell me I'm right here, Dad. At the height of the Geronimo Campaign, a fourth, a literal fourth, one quarter of the United States Army is in pursuit of a man who was once known as the one who yawns.
That's it. That's
crazy.
Talk to me about the Geronimo Campaign for a sec, LP. You know more about this.
He yawns at your attempts to catch him.
Yeah, it was just what you said, that you know, enough pressure was put on the U.S. Army now to go out and let's deal with this guy. I mean, we're talking about one renegade Indian that at this particular point the United States came up with this whole concept of, well, we have a Native American or an Indian problem. And they want their property. We want their property. So what we're going to do is we're going to create Indian lands, which then morphed into reservations. And we're going to give each one of these Apache bands, if you will, these subgroups, their own little reservation. And the Chiricahua Apache, which Geronimo was part of, they carved out a small section of a reservation, if you will, that's where the Chiricahua Apache were going to go. And then there was another small reservation for a different band and a different band. And, you know, for people that were nomadic in their way of life to now be forced to stay on one small spot, at least at the beginning, the Chiricahua reservation was pretty much the heart of their former lands, if you will. But then the United States government said, you know what, let's consolidate shit because that's a pretty nice piece of property you got there. You know, this wasn't the arid, barren desert. This was mountainous streams, woodlands, that kind of thing. Pretty nice choice property. Plus, there's also the possibility that maybe some more gold going to be found there. So that's just too nice a piece of property to give to Indians. So let's consolidate. And Geronimo took exception to that, and he skipped out. He skipped out as a total of three times off the reservation.
They called them breakouts, too, which I thought was pretty badass.
Right.
You can picture Thin Lizzy playing in the background.
He's off campus, and that ain't good. And so they send out Army units in pursuit of him to try to capture him.
Now, I did like that it was a tale of two generals, if you will, in terms of the Geronimo Campaign. I don't want to get too far ahead here, but the guy who originally was brought in is this guy. A little bit of a misgiving for a last name. His name is Crooks. Okay. So Crooks, not a Crooks. Great name. But Crooks was a good man, and one of the things that he said to Geronimo, which I thought was kind of cool, is you hear the name Crooks, Ant, what do you think?
Crooks. You're a crook. Come on.
Yeah.
This guy had some honor, though. One of his main tenets was never lie to an Indian, right? So and he would try to make their lives better. He promised he was going to try to help things out on the reservation. He's actually able to get Geronimo to return to the reservation, okay? But then he bails as soon as he realizes that Crooks can't actually keep his promises. Now, one of the things that was screwy here
– Crooks made the promise with good intentions. But once Geronimo got back to the reservation, then things went south, and it wasn't by the doings of crooks. It was by the doings of the hierarchy, if you will.
Right.
You got to remember that the zeitgeist of the time,
ooh,
if you will.
Larry.
We're coming back to that. That the only good Indian is a dead Indian.
To some.
Yes. There's an overwhelming section of the populace, of the white populace, of the U.S. settlers, if you will, that the only good Indian is a dead Indian. There was a famous quote from a guy who was a volunteer army officer recognized during the Civil War for defeating the Confederates. He was from Colorado, this guy by the name of John Shivington. Shivington makes this quote, "Damn any man who sympathizes with Indians. Kill and scalp them all, big and little. Nits make lice."
Says the man who has the last name of a prison knife.
Yes, Shivington. Yes.
But, you know, he was paraded through Denver. I mean, we're a little north of Apache territory. He's more with the Cheyenne and that type of thing. But that was the general attitude. There wasn't a division in anybody's mind about, well, those are Cheyenne, those are Sioux, those are Arapaho. It was like, if you're an Indian, you deserve to die. You're just getting in the way of progress here, and you have no reason to be.
Same thing on the other side, too, is that there were tribes that were more friendly to dealing with the United States, and then there was also other tribes that were like, I will make war with the white man until I die. Now, Geronimo's interesting because everybody thinks he's going to be in Camp B, right? That he's going to make war with the white man until he dies. He doesn't really hate the United States with the passion that he hated the Mexicans
right.
with.
So. He might dislike the United States, but he absolutely despises the Mexicans.
Yeah, don't fuck with my homeland is the right. argument with
right. you know. Or kill my mother and my wife and my kids.
Yeah, it's a land dispute versus, the people who murdered my family.
Right, right.
So I thought that was interesting, though. So now this kind of is a weird thing here, too, because there's a take-no-prisoners approach to Geronimo's raids. Now, that was done halfway to be brutal and then also halfway to during some of these raids. Make sure nobody finds out about you, right? Leave no witnesses, right? No survivors, no witnesses. That's fair enough, right? But he had some crazy things going on here, too. Now, like we said, a fourth of the U.S. Army is in pursuit of him here. Crooks is able to bring him in. When Crooks realizes he's not going to be able to execute a fair deal for Geronimo and the people on the reservations, he requests to be relieved. He goes, screw you guys, I'm going
right.
home.
He made promises to Geronimo, gets him to come back
and Naiche,
to the
reservation. Naiche, who's the true chief of the Apache, right?
Right. Gets him to come back to the reservation, kind of trying to patch things up. And then, he's underhandedly dealt with. And then Crooks resigns or is relieved of command, if you will. And the new guy comes in, this General Miles.
Well, Miles a little bit different, too, because he was kind of a modern warfare guy. Like, we're going to use cannons on you. We're going to use the cavalry, everything we can possibly get.
We're bringing in all manner of forces.
Fire
Crooks,
everything.
Yeah.
Crooks also took on the tactic that the only way we're going to catch an Apache like Geronimo is by using other Apaches.
Mm-hmm.
And there were other Apaches who were more than willing to act as scouts to go find where he's hiding, and that whether it be in the Sierra Madres or wherever he might be hiding out.
Because there's another reason Geronimo was not popular was because he wouldn't accept things from the white man.
Right. Plus the fact he's going around killing other whites and giving the Apaches a bad name, so that everybody is judging the Apache by what Geronimo is doing.
Yes.
All right. I mean, there's good Indians and there's bad Indians, or there's, we won't bring it into a
I laugh at the foreshadowing of the right. bad Indians line, because we're going to get to in a minute. As we're moving forward here, the people who are loyal to him are loyal to him because of his results, right? And his refusal to end the Apache nomadic way of life by confinement to a reservation, like you said. So you're telling this guy, you're literally telling this fish to fly. He ain't going to do it. But due to that take-no-prisoners attitude, Geronimo is also considered to be a bloodthirsty butcher by many American settlers, and his exploits are getting followed very, very closely. The Americans are more successful than the Mexicans in tracking him due to, like you said, their use of Apache scouts in order to hunt down their own tribal brother.
That was definitely, though, looked down upon by a lot of the people within the military.
It destroyed Geronimo, too.
There's no way you're going to trust an Apache.
Destroyed him as in that's how he ended up getting like captured or
well,
like
it emotionally devastated him because it was the idea that where he was hiding out in these ancestral lands of the Apache now like all right so let's put it this way. Aunt, you got a very nice house that your family has down in Long Beach Island. All right, it's a very nice house. Now okay. you brought me down there one time. All right, now imagine I start bringing other people down to your family's beach house. You have a problem with that, right? What do they call that? Bennies?
Bennies.
Yep. The Bennies coming into our ancestral homeland on the Jersey Shore, betraying the people, building a boardwalk, fighting at Midway Cheesesteak. But so now he's bothered by this because he's hiding up in the ancestral land, so nobody's supposed to be able to find him, but now the other Apache are giving away the
giving
secrets.
Away the, right.
It's like a magician going out there.
Family secrets.
You know there's two doves, right? You know that, right?
I'm surprised they didn't consider that treasonous.
What's the line in The Godfather when you never talk...
never go against the family in,
no, against
in front
the
of
family
everyone.
And somebody outside the family, right?
So it bothers Geronimo no end because his hiding spots are now being discovered by the other Apache, and his numbers continue to dwindle due to death and abandonment, and it's not looking good, all right?
If you're constantly on the run, too, it's hard to restock and resupply, too.
Well, it gets tough. And then, like you said, General Miles is hunting him down with all this artillery known to man. Now, he decides that it's time to surrender, okay? And he agrees to meet with U.S. forces at a location of his choosing. For 3 days, the two parties negotiated back and forth. The Americans offered some mescal to Geronimo, who wisely said no. So I'm kidding. They didn't show up with any mescal. But that'd be fucked up. So... now, during the 3 days here, during this time, a gentleman by the name of C.S. Fly, another poorly named son of a bitch, C.S. Fly is a photographer who has taken the only known photos of Geronimo and his sons. These are cool pictures. I'm going to put them up on the Instagram. After the 3 days, they agree to terms that are still disputed, by the way. There's the idea of a conditional versus an unconditional surrender, the idea of whether or not he was a war party leader. And is he a prisoner of war or is he a criminal? What's he going to be? And depending on who you talk to, you get a different story. Geronimo's like, oh, I'm a prisoner of war. But then the people who – the only good Indian is a dead Indian are saying, nope, that's a murderer. He's just a murderer.
Right. So,
now, what's interesting here, they're not drinking mezcal, but the Native Americans, they do enjoy the whiskey, at least the guys in Geronimo. I mean, who wouldn't? After fighting a war in a mountain in Arizona, I mean, a little whiskey goes a long way. So – Geronimo's men actually receive a warning from a U.S. soldier who happens to be selling them the whiskey.
Yeah, that once they start coming around, then this one idiot starts handing out the whiskey, and so you know that they're going to hang you when you get back to the reservation.
Right? Yeah, as soon as you cross into American territory, they're going to open fire on you, is what he was warned. And after what happened at Casas Grande, you know, when dealing with the Mexicans over there, Geronimo's not going to stick around to find out. He says, fuck this. And in the middle of the night, they just make their disappearance, if you will. So Geronimo is able to escape or break out of the reservations before this, an unparalleled three times. All right. Now, in 1889, here's some two pretty interesting guys are going to come in on the United States side of things. Captain Harry Lawton of the 4th Cavalry and Lieutenant Charles Gatewood, whom the Apache...
Which, yeah, I loved this fact. Because I read it online. I love what they call him. It's so good.
So Charles Gatewood, who looks like... He looks like a Manning brother, all right? Lieutenant Charles Gatewood, whom the Apache would come to admire despite their nickname for... The Native Americans had... They were so honest. They didn't understand how to lie, really. So they'd be so honest with you that it's almost like if you want to really know what you look like, ask a child to draw you. So... Poor Lieutenant Gatewood, who's speaking some Apache to the Apache and showing this ultimate respect to them. That's not, you know, the only good Indian is a dead Indian. And then this Gatewood guy is like, I'm going to learn your language and communicate with you, human being to human being. And they called him, Long Nose. He speaks the Apache. So this poor bastard's name is Long Nose to them.
That's fantastic.
They take over the Captain Harry Lawton, the 4th Cavalry, and Lieutenant Gatewood take over the endeavor, if you will. And the operation is now in their hands, and they have the duty of returning Geronimo to the reservation now for a final time. The agreement is, and Kahuna just pulled a picture of him up. You know what he looks like? He looks like if Eli, Peyton, and Drew Brees all got coagulated into one perfect quarterback.
A little bit of a little bit of Don Draper from Mad Men too.
Oh, John Hamm, yeah.
To be fair, that is a big nose.
Yeah, and that's not even a side profile.
Also true. Yeah, we have no idea. He could have a nice hook in that thing we're not aware of. Right. But
he's a West Point grad. I mean, he's a well-educated guy and took it upon himself to learn the Apache language. So
the Apache liked him.
He was not the typical Army soldier or Army officer of the time that took the opposite point of view, that the best way of dealing with an Indian is to kill him.
Oh, yeah. He's got a cool – he's got some Sergeant Elias to him and not Sergeant Barnes from Platoon. I'll put it that way.
Okay.
So now, unfortunately, the orders are Geronimo goes back to the reservations dead or alive. So Geronimo winds up eventually surrendering him, but he credits Lawton – Captain Harry Lawton of the 4th Cavalry for his tenacious pursuit. He goes, man, you guys just, you got me. All right, that's it. He was getting tired is what it was.
This pursuit was no small endeavor because were accounts that the Apaches were putting 70 miles in a day. And yet the Army was, these guys were still chasing after him. And you're putting down 70 miles back then either on foot or on horseback.
Yeah, imagine the poor balls. The poor balls being crushed to death.
You're powder, baby.
Oofa. That's where steak tartare came from. Do you know that? I'm being sincere. The steak tartare, what it was that the warriors of the time would have to put their meat, they would take the fresh kills that they would have, and they'd put the meat in a bag underneath their saddle and ride on the meat all day. And then they would eat it at the end of the day. They didn't have time to cook. So that's where steak tartare came from. But anyway... he also, as he's surrendering now, he gives credit to Lawton for his tenacious pursuit and then chooses to surrender to Gatewood because he liked him because the guy spoke Apache and he was admired by Geronimo's men for some of his gallantry. This was a good dude right here. So upon his capture, though, Geronimo had in his possession a Winchester 76 rifle that is still on display at West Point, the United States Military Academy.
That's cool.
And his Colt revolver and his Bowie knife, Jim Bowie, will be an American loser at some point on this show. He's one of my favorite Americans ever to read about. Wild dude. They are both still on display in Fort Sill, Oklahoma. So this effectively ends Geronimo's days as a war raider, and he lived the remainder of his life as a prisoner of war. However, the legend continues to grow here, and this sort of a fondness for the Apache warrior begins to appear in some camps. They're like, well, it's like when everyone's the devil when they're running against your candidate, and then as soon as the election's over, the person who loses, like, well, he wasn't really that bad, he probably would have been okay.
Had some good points, had some qualities about him.
Same way where it's like, I don't hate the New England Patriots, but if they had beaten the Giants in either one of those Super Bowls, I'd be like, I hate Tom Brady, I hope he dies. But I don't, I kind of love those guys. So there's a weird fondness that's starting to show up here. And what I thought was interesting is this sounds like a dick move. Take the guy out of his ancestral home in the Arizona Territory. Take him out of there and send him to Florida. Sounds mean, right, Ant?
Yes.
Ant, you did a little college down there in Florida, right?
College time, yeah.
I did a little military time over in Florida.
Mine was way rougher.
I think so. but we were both victim of the Florida problem is that Florida brings out this wildness in people. And it is egged on by the fact that you can buy beer at gas stations.
At Walmart.
Yep.
36 rack of Keystone Light was under $20. It just doesn't make sense.
Nope, it's not supposed to happen. All right? We tempted the fates.
Well, it's right next to the bath salts for some reason. I wonder what ever gave them that idea.
But
part of that too, though. I mean, if they took him out of, they captured him in Mexico, and they're going to bring him back to Arizona. Mm-hmm. He's hated in Arizona because he's killing all the settlers and stuff in Arizona that he probably would have been lynched at best if they brought him back to Arizona. So the idea was, well, we're going to cool your jets in Florida for 2 years, and we'll keep you in Florida for 2 years, and then you'll be allowed to come back to the reservation and back to your ancestral homeland after 2 years, that maybe things will calm down at that time. Guess what? The United States government screwed him. That they brought him to Florida, and I don't know how many years was he in Florida.
Well, it's tough because I want to unpack that a little bit more if we can. They bring him to, and it's done with a supposedly noble intention, like you said, of getting him out of trouble with the Arizona law enforcement.
This is my favorite part, if I think I know where you're going with this story.
So they send him to Fort Dickens, in Pensacola. Now here's what sucks. They send him and a bunch of his Apache men and a bunch of the Apache scouts that helped find him.
Right.
They send all of them to Florida. These guys wind up in Pensacola. You ever been to Pensacola, Dad?
Yeah. Pensacola?
Yeah. I've been to Pensacola.
Panhandle.
Yeah.
No.
There's
a big naval base there.
Yeah, my friend, mostly an air base too, but my friend Emily Dillon is out there. She produced a comedy show that we used to go out there and do. I forget, it was like Jellyfish Cafe or some shit, but it's very pretty. But I will say this, the 12 hours I stayed there, it's enough.
Yeah.
All right. So very nice out there. But they bring him out to Pensacola area, and then later they bring him to a place called Fort Marion. Kahuna, Fort Marion was the English name or the American name of this same fort that I'm going to ask you to pull up a picture of, buddy. When I went down to Jacksonville the last time, I did an episode of the podcast From the Road, and we covered a very a similar topic to a badass Native American chief who was the head of the Seminole. And he was known as the chief at that time was known as Osceola, okay? And he was held captive in the Castillo de San Marcos, okay? So I can see it popped up there on the Google thing already.
Yeah.
But anyway, the Castillo de San Marcos, beautiful Spanish fort looking over Matanzas Bay, Massacre Bay, right? And it is unbelievable. It's actually made out of crushed seashell. That's what the entire fort is made up of. But beautiful fort over here. Gorgeous place. True life. I did propose to my then fiance over there one night.
In Massacre Bay?
A massacre in and of itself.
next time you tell the story of Massacre Bay, lead with that. You were the guy who actually proposed there.
Well, I figure if I ever get married again, I'm going to do it at Little Bighorn. I'm going to say, there can't possibly go worse than what those poor bastards dealt with.
The Salem witch trials. I mean, that might be
don't you be misogynist, Larry Burke. Beautiful place. If you can go down there and see it in St. Augustine, definitely go check it out. One of the most beautiful cities I've ever seen in my life. I truly love it every time I'm down there. But that's where poor Geronimo is getting brought into. Now, some of the Apache kids were giving accounts, too, that they were fast. This is the first time they're seeing the ocean in their life. Because you're right out there on the bay. They're watching the waves come in. This has got to be supernatural shit to them.
So it wasn't just Geronimo. It was some of his men, the two guys that were most responsible for finding him. Mm-hmm. Well, they arrest them besides. I mean,
throw them on a pile.
That's right. They were army scouts. They were hired as army scouts to go find this guy. They helped find him, and then, well, we'll throw them in jail too.
This is where the heartbreak comes in. No way to spin this funny, all right? There's just no way on this one. But they start dropping like flies out there. They're not used to the Florida humidity. They're coming from a dry heat, and they're just dropping these people. They don't know how to farm. They don't know what they're doing. Geronimo's given a small piece of farmland. He tries his hand. He gives it a legit
go. Gives it a shot.
He didn't want to keep fighting anymore.
Coming from Arizona, you don't know too much about malaria and those kind of Florida diseases as well.
So these guys are dropping like flies, almost it's brutal. It's almost a bubonic plague-like toll that it's taking on these people. A lot of them are dying. Now, meanwhile, back in Arizona, I forget what the age range is, but it's pretty much teenagers into high school age. All those kids in the Apache tribe are sent to the Carlisle Indian Boarding School in Pennsylvania. And the school had some good things that it offered. It had some truly terrible things that it accidentally offered. Like you said, lack of knowledge about disease at the time. These kids die of tuberculosis faster than shit you've ever – I mean, it is – again, it's the Black Death is coming.
And pneumonia people. Because now you're taking an Arizona who's never seen snow, and now you're sending them to Pennsylvania.
Yep. And this is the one that kills you. They're cutting their hair off, and they're giving them English names. So your name is Stephen now. And he goes, oh, I thought I was
whatever.
Again, I don't even want to make a joke
everything,
about it.
Everything was sanitized. You had no Apache identity. Your Apache identity was to be scrubbed away.
Well, there was some interesting stuff here, though. So down in Florida, where the head of Osceola disappeared, by the way. That's from another episode. Someday we'll redo the Osceola episode, Kahuna, because the audio is terrible, I've been told.
Mm. Wasn't your...
It was done with my buddy Jeff did it in a room in his house, and we tried to do it right there. But
I got you, man. We'll make that one of my days. You'll come in and we'll just do it.
Yeah, we'll bang it out, man. Very easy. But fascinating story about Osceola, but he dies in this prison. So imagine Geronimo gets there and they're like, oh, hey, we had a famous Native American here one time too, bud, you know? Oh, what was his name? Osceola, real famous guy. Good Native American fella, you know? What happened to him? Oh, he died. Yeah.
Of what?
Right here. Same room as you. Isn't that spooky, Mr. Geronimo, eh? So... but yeah, he died in there as well. Damn, now Geronimo starts to pick. There's this desire for fame because Osceola is a legendary character in St. Augustine at this point. People still search for his missing head. Somebody said it was preserved in a pickle jar, is what I was told. Anyway, so now there's this. People want to see this. You know, the deadliest Indian of all. So they start getting the idea that some of these Florida businessmen. Well, what if we pay Geronimo a little bit and he lets people come see him? He starts becoming. A tourist attraction. Come see the legendary Geronimo.
Geronimo.
All right. Now, for a small fee, you could come lay your eyes on it. For a slightly larger fee, you could take with you as a souvenir a button that Geronimo would cut off of his own jacket for you. Now, imagine every kid that's coming through or every person like, my God, Geronimo chose me. He reached out. He cut the button off and he handed me I have one. There's only a finite amount of buttons. Right,
that Geronimo actually wore.
But what Geronimo would do is that when they would take him around on these tours, every time he went to a train station, he'd go, I need about 1,000 buttons, please. And he would sew extra buttons onto his shirt so that he could cut one off and give.
You know, Geronimo had his own merch table.
Exactly. You hear that, Mike and Ming out there at Comic-Con San Diego?
There you go.
Check out what our boy Geronimo's up to. What are we going to say?
Yeah, it's insane, right? Because I think it was a 10-year period from which they start, like, he's a prisoner of war. He's slaughtering everybody. And, hey, let's parade him around. Check out this new sideshow we have. It's absolutely insane. Right.
While he's being paraded around, though, he's still under armed guard.
Yeah, absolutely.
It wasn't
for the rest of his life. Yeah,
I don't think I'm going to go to Philadelphia next week and, you know.
So he's on an unwilling tour, just like any other music artist.
Essentially, yes.
Okay.
But the craziest thing ever... that I read is they did like a bit where that you could watch Geronimo like hunt a buffalo, and the people that set it up had no idea Apache don't hunt buffalo.
Well, we weren't the most informed people at that time.
If social media was around back then, those people would be destroyed.
Are you going to talk about how our man Ted Roosevelt is involved in this?
He does get involved. Now, there's one other part we got to hit, though.
That was part of a parade.
One other part we got to hit about this, because he is under armed guard, like we said, but he's able to travel a little bit. He's able to make himself some money. So in a weird way, so you're taking the guy who doesn't want confinement because he's got this nomadic lifestyle, and now he's able to travel a little bit. So you're meeting him halfway almost. All right. Geronimo is able to partake in the St. Louis World's Fair. He dressed in traditional garb and posed for photos. He was such a hit that Pawnee Bill, Pawnee Bill was a good showman for the time. He was a friend of Buffalo Bill. He had the Wild West shows. But that's the guy Ant was talking about, where he had no fucking clue what he was talking about.
He was a B character to the Wild Bill.
Exactly.
Buffalo Bill show.
So that's a cool photo. I did not see that one. It just got pulled up by the Kahuna. It's I believe that's Geronimo showing up at the St. Louis World's Fair. And he's showing up
on a car. In the 1905 locomobile. Yeah.
Which looks oddly like vehicle. A Jeep Wrangler. I want to hit this one point real quick here. It being brought into these Wild West shows, he's such a hit at the St. Louis World Fair that Pawnee Bill brings him in, and he is depicted as, Ant was saying, as a tamed savage that would scalp the audience members if given just a chance. So the shows made him a lot of money, but the poor depiction of the Native Americans, who were liars and cheats and steals and all this other stuff, kind of tarnishes the show's legacies. They could have been something really great, that you're going to educate the entire rest of the world on what this group of people that are vanishing from American culture were all about, and we got it wrong. So that part sucks.
Well, vanishing or we're eradicating. It depends on your point of view, right?
And it's,
we're doing everything we can to eradicate the Indians. Mm-hmm. And now we're parading them around, that you can see one of the last few remaining famous Native Americans.
And a lot of people were fascinated by it. I mean, growing up as a kid, I was fascinated by him. So you learn the adult side of the conversation when you're smart enough to handle it. If you sat me down and you were like, now, Kevin, I know you like Last of the Mohicans, but it's very important that we talk about how, you know, these people were slaughtered and diseases. I was like, I don't want to play this anymore. I'm going to go play Mario Brothers. Now, Kevin... Don't judge all Italians as plumbers. But anyway, this is where we get to. In this bizarre high water, low water mark for the man who yawns, he's invited to participate in the inaugural parade of a U.S. president. Did anyone guess it?
Yeah, I think Cahoons was on.
Did the Kahuna guess that the president who had Geronimo and I think it was four other Native Americans of high reputation in full war paint, full regalia, riding a horse down his inaugural presidential parade in 1905, Teddy motherfucking Roosevelt. All right? The king, Teddy motherfucking Roosevelt. Now, it's weird here because it's not necessarily a good interaction that he has with him. Geronimo is one of the five natives, yes, who gets brought into here, and when the parade route sees them, there's this enthusiastic response. There's literally, as Ant was saying, 10 years ago, this is the deadliest Indian of all, the scourge of the plains, and now they're chanting, hooray for Geronimo! over there, because Washington's been settled for a long time now. They're excited, like, ooh, the Wild West is coming here to us. This is great. It's like when I go see Pearl Jam. I've seen Pearl Jam enough times in enough different towns that I know every town is Eddie Vedder's favorite town to play. I gotta tell you, people of Memphis, Tennessee, it's just beautiful to be back here in our favorite city, Newark, New Jersey. You people of Philadelphia, you don't know what you do to us.
Check out this photo I just pulled up. This is the six Indians chief at the inaugural parade.
Oh, that's cool, man. That's really cool. We got to start putting more of these up.
Yeah, you know, but that's, again, that's so disparaging to the Native Americans. It's like putting the...
it's awful. They made Mickey Mouse
out dancing,
of them.
The dancing bear, right, going down the Pennsylvania Avenue.
Well, you know what the intention was? One of the newspapers reported that the intention was to show that it was the hatchet was buried forever, that it was time to, you know, we're going to move on together. And to his credit, T.R. would meet with Geronimo a few weeks later. And while he did grant him a cordial audience, he denied his request. And this was a heartfelt request from Geronimo, who was not like a warm guy. But he was saying that he wanted his people to go back to their ancestral lands in Arizona. And he said, he goes, well, I mean, no. All right, can't send you back. Because he was afraid that, okay, well, we just had this whole thing where we're burying the hatchet, and I got all these other problems I'm worrying about. We're expanding America. Because that's the Gilded Age of America, really. Right. I mean, that Teddy Roosevelt, that's Manifest Destiny, is that it's... biggest strength at the time. So he can't have them go back to because he's afraid that the Arizona people are going to go crazy after him. The natives, I should say, are going to rally around Geronimo. Right. The settlers are going to want revenge for the shit that was done to their families. It could get real ugly real fast. And he literally says, he goes, no, Geronimo, because he said this through an interpreter. This one bugged me a little. You have a bad heart. You were bad Indians out there. You killed a lot of my people. He goes, I'm going to have to see. You go out back to your reservations for a couple of years, and I'll see how you behave, kind of a thing.
Right.
Like, we'll talk about this at a later date.
Right. So. But and I think, too, part of it is that what's playing well for Geronimo on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. might not necessarily get the same warm reception with the crowds cheering for him if he was in Tucson, Arizona.
Oh, absolutely. If bin Laden did spoken word poetry, he'd be, you know, welcome in some circles.
Right. I've been trying to think who that modern person is, but like, because you're always good at comparing, like, oh, that's like if today, and I got nobody.
Geronimo's case, is, as far as like trying to find,
yeah, like modern day, like that would be like in 10 years we're gonna parade them around,
right?
Jesus,
I mean, he's a terrorist. But it one man's terrorist is another man's freedom fighter. Yeah. He's looking to defend his people and defend his native lands.
Now, here's where it was interesting, too. He actually was quoted all... he would say certain things to certain people. So if he spoke to the Apache, he would say, oh, I still maintain the religion of our ancestors. And then if he was talking to white people, like, he goes, I like this Christian religion.
Actually, in his book, I read a paragraph out of it that said... in his later years in life, he would try to talk people into becoming Christian. That he actually
There's truth to both sides of what he's saying too, which is great.
I think Geronimo was also playing his audience too. That depending on who he's talking to, is going to be, you know, whether he's going to be pro Apache with the religion of the old ways, or we're going to go with this new white man Christian kind of a thing.
Correct. Now the ancient Native American spiritualism told him, as Ant was telling us earlier, no white man's bullet will ever kill you, or no bullet will ever kill you. He's right. If only they'd warned him about falling off your fucking horse in the winter. Falls off his horse. Old man at this point, okay? Married 9 times, like we said. Falls off of his horse and can't get back onto the horse, can't get back into town. He has to stay out in the cold overnight, and gets pneumonia. All right. So on February 17th, 1909, his wife, furious at all nine wives, angry at no Valentine's Day gift that year. They're furious. I mean, I believe his last wife was still alive at this point, but he dies of pneumonia. He dies in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, still far away from his natural lands. And he dies. His dying words to his nephew on his deathbed were, "I never should have surrendered. I should have fought until I was the last man alive." So he regretted it. He just didn't have the strength anymore to continue the fight. Geronimo is honored with three cities in three different states being named after him. The U.S. Airborne paratroopers began yelling his name as they jumped out of airplanes in order to show that they, like Geronimo, had no fear.
Right.
So
that was back in 1939, pre-World War II, when paratroopers were first coming in as a an army force, a military force. There was a movie entitled, guess what, Geronimo, that all these trainees were watching this movie, and then they decided that's a pretty badass guy right there, that he had no fear. So as they're jumping out of a perfectly good airplane, they're screaming Geronimo, and that's where the whole, you know, you got to yell Geronimo as you're jumping off the high dive.
And in the military, we're very fond of Native Americans. There's Tomahawk missiles, there's Black Hawk helicopters, Apache helicopters. I mean, we kind of, the military absorbs that and shows kind of a respect for it. And it's always done in a very good way, too. Another thing with the paratroopers is that they would also, a lot of them would shave their heads into Mohawks,
right,
which was a Native American tradition. So there's one last thing we got to get to here, Kahuna. I know we're keeping you up late, brother. I'm gonna take care of you on the way out. All right?
Dude, don't worry about it.
He who yawns is yawning.
That's
Hey, I wasn't the man who yawns today. This was a...
No, that's correct. That's a...
So I do apologize if that tends to happen.
No, shut up, jerk. Here's the part where your jaw's going to drop. You ready? His story does not end there. The man is dead. The story is not over. There is a conspiracy theory that continues to this day that the skull of Geronimo is in possession of the Skull and Bone Secret Society at Yale. Skull and Bones, by the way, that's a secret society that churns out almost exclusively CEOs of Fortune 500 companies and presidents of the United States. At one time, John Kerry and George W. Bush were running against each other. It was the only time in the history of the United States that both men were members of Skull and Bones running against one another. Okay? Now, the Bush family... George W. Bush was a member of Skull and Bones. George H.W. Bush was a member of Skull and Bones. And Prescott Bush, the father, all right, was also a member of Skull and Bones. Guess where Prescott Bush was stationed during World War I?
Where?
Fort Sill, Oklahoma, which is where Geronimo is buried. Okay? And the if you believe this... there was a letter that was given out that was found by people who were looking into Skull and Bones, because to this day, we don't know shit about Skull and Bones. But it is rumored that the, quote, skull of the worthy Geronimo the Terrible is in the possession of Skull and Bones, that it's part of one of their rituals, that there is a skull that you have to talk to and admit like your sins to, and they say that it might be the skull of Geronimo. The idea being that Prescott Bush and... I believe six other Skull and Bones members were all assigned as guards in the cemetery out in Fort Sill during World War I, that they were able to grave rob, if you will. So there's the idea that – and there was lawsuits that were filed about this. Now get this one. This one always makes me laugh a little bit. Due to the club's secrecy, it's never been proven nor disproven. People who looked into it, they said there's no evidence to show that Geronimo's body was taken. It should all be in the same spot. Now Geronimo's family members and ancestors – are going to write to the president to find out some answers for this. Guess who's the fucking president at the time? Hey, did your grandfather steal our great-grandfather's head?
Oh, no.
Can we have that back? And they never received a response as far as...
I did not steal your grandfather's head.
That's pretty good.
That's a candle over there. We have two candles sticking out. Martha, that candle holder is actually... Do you right. believe this?
That's not a Halloween decoration.
Well, why do you know? Grandpappy's old decoration wasn't a fucking decoration.
Oh, man. But...
should probably whether... give that back.
Yeah, and Geronimo's gravesite at Fort Sill has now since been capped over with
concrete.
Big thick concrete kind of a thing. So it's going to be very difficult for anybody to use.
Did the same with Charlie Chaplin.
Ground penetrating radar or whatever to see what's actually in the gravesite.
Well, wherever his remains wind up, it has done nothing to challenge his legacy or his legend. The leader of the Apache resistance, a name that we've all known forever, and hopefully if you listen to the full episode, you learned a little bit more about guys. I thought he was fascinating. I was so happy. So, LP, do you have any other points before we wrap up here for the day?
No, I think that's a pretty good thing. I got one little thing here that General Miles, when he was chasing after Geronimo, trying to catch up with him, that was one of the first times that they actually used the heliograph. You know what a heliograph is?
No.
You watch the cowboy movies when they're taking the mirror and they're flicking sunlight back and forth, sending messages. That's a heliograph, that they're actually doing Morse code with the dots and dashes with the reflection of the mirror, that they could, you know, send messages without
and those mirrors were made in New Jersey.
I haven't been able to come up with that one, but
when you guys were talking about how they were pursuing Geronimo before, I just in my head I couldn't stop hearing the Blues Brothers music. They send everybody after him and they can't catch him.
It was
all to save.
You can visit his grave, by the way. It's still out there for us. Kahuna's brought a photo up of it. And did you think of anything else you wanted? Because you had some good shit today, brother.
Thank you. No, nothing else. The only other thing I would say is I'm not sitting in the seat again on my fourth time because I keep looking at that pinup girl on the wall with the Spider-Man bikini on.
Yeah, it's a picture of my sister, actually.
Super distracting.
Being weird right now.
Is that where you get your redhead thing from?
No.
Sorry.
It's all good. It's visual jokes in the audio medium of podcasting, folks. Kahuna, I want to say thank you for staying out late with us here today, buddy.
Of course.
I want to say thank you to LP for coming out. I know you got shit to do tomorrow here. A lot of good research, as always.
This yawning man always loves to come hang out.
No, you're good. You're fun that way, man. And Anthony Cianci, thank you so much, buddy. You're always welcome on the show. I can't wait to have you and your father back on. That's going to be a good one.
Thank you, guys, for having me.
Like we said, if you enjoy the show, go ahead, just leave me a review on iTunes, whatever you can do there. We're trying to keep this thing rolling. We just need a little bit more support from you. So if you like the show, maybe share it. Check me out on Facebook, KP Burke on there. Twitter at KP Burke Sucks. Instagram at KP Burke Sucks. American Loser Podcast has its own Instagram page now. If you want to check us out on there, if you subscribe, you're going to get the episodes early, okay? I'm trying to come up with some weird perk here, but I don't really want to be charging people for anything just yet. And, you know, we're working on it, all right? But the more help you can give me on the ground level, the more I can reward you guys when we get somewhere with this thing. But, again, it's an absolute blast. If you're down with the show, God damn it, do we love you. Thank you so much, all right? Guys, my name was KP Burke, and that was Geronimo, American Loser.
An American loser the day I was born. American loser the day I was born. An American loser the day I was born.